Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The path to an NFL championship starts in 32 unique locker rooms across the country.
I ain't blinking, don't you blink. You blink, I'll cut your eyelids off.
But only one can achieve football immortality.
Fires into the end zone.
Which one of these Saturday Supermen will carry their programs all the way to the championship game?
Loads up, looks long, throws, end zone, touchdown.
Touchdown!
Alabama, the champion of college football.
Football's journey is documented here.
Leave no doubt.
Every weekend with your host, D.A. It's Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio.
Touchdown!
And a happy Sunday morning to you, everybody. We come to you live from the Quicken Loans studios, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. How are we doing? A chaotic Saturday of college football. An interesting Sunday in the NFL. We'll break it all down this morning on Sunday Morning Football. Coming your way, what happened to Oregon? Old Dominion, what? And a crucial turning point of the season type of affair in Houston today. We'll hear the best radio calls of yesterday's college football action. And five-time Jaguars Pro Bowler Jimmy Smith will join us. Are the Jacksonville Jaguars the best team in the NFL? Plus, we look at today's NFL lines with our Vegas virtuoso Nick Kostos from CBS Sports HQ coming up next hour on the show. It's all on the table. And college football fans, after what you witnessed yesterday, hit us up on the phone at 855-212-4CBS. NFL fans, the same phone number, toll free, 855-212-4227. On Twitter, get at me, DA on CBS. So much to get to this morning. So much to get to. Also, next hour on the show, we'll hear from former players on Vontae Davis, one of the biggest stories of last NFL weekend. We'll hear Tony Dungy, Pro Football Hall of Famer, on criticism levied against Mike Tomlin and where the Steelers are at right now. And a brand new football league will kick off this winter in February. What's the thinking behind now? That can separate itself from other failed spring leagues of the past. All of that this morning on the show, but man, we begin with the ridiculousness, the sublime, the agony of yesterday's college football action.
In football's Wild West, there are winners and there are losers. He shoots from the hip. DA is the Sunday Gunslinger.
We need men like him to make towns safer, decent people.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
Now jerk that pistol and go to work.
All right, let's do it.
Let's start in Eugene, Oregon, in Autzen Stadium, where the Pac-12 had a problem on its hands. Here was its best team, the Stanford Cardinal, not only losing on the road to the Ducks, but getting waxed. Quack, quack. This is going to be a 30-7 lead by Oregon as soon as they punched in the touchdown that had just been reversed. It was already looking like 30-7. But instead, an errant snap, an awful, egregious turnover, meant a Stanford scoop and score back the other way 80 yards. And suddenly Stanford had life, except that the Cardinal ran out of time. Oregon had the football. They had a lead late, under a minute to play, and they're just grinding clock and running things out when, whoops, another fumble, another turnover. Stanford had life again. Here's the Cardinal going down the field and kicking the game-tying field goal, sending us to overtime where the unthinkable happened, where the impossible happened, which was Oregon blowing a 17-point lead at home and having multiple chances to ice it and gagging it away.
Herbert has the football, four-man rush. Clean pocket, Herbert dancing, throwing. Knocked away and intercepted! Stanford wins! A an incredible come-from-behind overtime victory by the Cardinal here in Eugene.
That's Stanford Learfield Network on the call. That seals the game. And let me just start by giving Stanford major credit here. Look, David Shaw and that program knows exactly who they are. They never panic. They keep their nose to the grindstone. All they do is one play after another play, and we'll just kind of crawl our way back in there. We will physically punish you, even though Oregon was taking the fight to Stanford early in that game. We won't lose our cool. We'll play to the final whistle. We'll make plays when we have to. And that's exactly what happened. What a touchdown to win it in overtime. A volleyball-style tap to himself in the end zone. I mean, the touchdown was unbelievably athletic to make, but it should have never come down to that. It should have never come down to that. And that's a chance for Mario Cristobal's program to have a real stamp game. And instead, they gagged it. They choked it. They choked it all away. And I say the Pac-12 had a problem because Stanford was its only real, honest-to-goodness chance at a college football playoff. And they were on the ropes last night at Autzen Stadium and found a way to survive at the standing eight count. That was their last shot. The Pac-12 needed that because the rest of that conference is PU. Terrible by the Ducks. Terrible. But not as terrible as what happened to Virginia Tech yesterday. The Hokies were ranked to the top 15, boys and girls. They were a number 13 team of the country. They went to Norfolk, Virginia. Why? They played on the road against Old Dominion. What? Old Dominion? That's an FCS team, right? Well, no, they're no longer an FCS team, but they did have their backup quarterback. And so, Virginia Tech with one of the best defenses in the country, Bud Foster coordinated them, are going to absolutely smack around a backup quarterback, right, for Old Dominion. That's why Saturdays are Saturdays. Listen to the glory of my man Carter Blackburn on the CBS Sports Network. Not only did Old Dominion win, they put up nearly a 50-burger on Virginia Tech.
Fake it. LaRusso. What's the end zone? Fulgham. Touchdown! Old Dominion! Fulgham holds it in! And the Monarchs are a PAT away from tying it again. LaRusso hands off. Jeremy Cox. Big hole up the middle. Cox goes barreling into the end zone. And with less than 10 minutes to go in Norfolk, Virginia, winless Old Dominion has the lead. LaRusso to the goal line. LaRusso, it is caught! Wow. Touchdown! Duhart, remarkable grab with a hokey draped all over him. Has to snap it and hit a knee from here. LaRusso, they're going to hand off, but you just have to take a knee here. Cox goes rolling. He wants the end zone. Cox inside the 10. He stretches, and he adds in an exclamation point for Old Dominion. Why take a knee when you can celebrate in the end zone? Old Dominion stuns 13th-ranked Virginia Tech. Winless in 2018, no more. The biggest win in all Dominion Monarch football history.
That series of calls, that montage, courtesy of CBS Sports Network and Carter Blackburn on the call, gave me chills. Guys, this is not just an upset. This is one of the most unpredictably ridiculous box scores you will ever see. Old Dominion, which had just restarted its football program not long ago, now finally in FBS, threw for 500 yards against Vatek with a backup quarterback. Blake LaRusso threw for 495 and four touchdowns. And then, as you heard Carter say, they could have merely taken a knee and run out the clock. And instead, they busted it open for a touchdown to the ground. Jeremy Cox added 130 yards of the ground. Old Dominion put up 650 yards of offense. 650 and 50 yards of offense against one of the best defenses in the country. This is not just an upset. This is historically one of the most bizarre box scores in games that has ever been played in college football history. Seriously, that's a backup quarterback and Old Dominion putting up 600-plus yards at a top 15 team. This is also why power programs never play on the road against group of five teams or mid-major teams, is because only bad things can happen. My God, the worst thing just happened at Virginia Tech. That was absolute insanity. And today in the NFL, there's two 0-2 teams going at it in Houston. And guys, whoever loses this game between the Texans and the Giants, the season is over before October.
The good news is we got a lot of high-quality guys in our locker room that they understand it. They've all been through the ups and downs of a season, and, you know, we're embarking on our third game, and it's important that we just continue to get better. You know, if this was easy, everybody could do it, and, you know, unfortunately, it didn't go the way we wanted the first two games, but we just get back to work and try to put it all on the table for Houston.
There's definitely urgency out on the practice field. There's definitely, a good attitude in the locker room. I mean, guys really worked hard. We've had a good couple days of practice. We need to have a good day today to finish up the week. But you can tell that guys, you know, they really want to play well in front of their home crowd. It's the first home game for us to start the season with two road games. So get to come home, play in front of our home fans. And I think guys are really excited about the game.
Ultimate litmus test here. The New York Giants have a disaster of an offensive line, and the Houston Texans are champing at the bit to try to get in there and get their sack totals up, because J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus and those guys have an unbelievable pass rush. And I just think that today you're going to see Eli Manning look like a deer in headlights yet again. These are two desperate teams. Whoever loses, the season is over. I think it's going to be the Giants that lose on the road in Houston. But remember, Deshaun Watson has not gone off yet this season. So if the Giants are going to win this football game, it means the ball in the hands of Odell Beckham, who I know is frustrated early season after all of that money, not getting a lot of chances to make plays. And Deshaun Watson, can he get off the schneid right now, because he has not been good in the first two games of the season? But this is a season make or break game, a huge litmus test for both teams, and I think Houston comes out on top today. That's your Sunday Gunslinger. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. As always, call us toll-free throughout the show here on Sunday Morning Football. It's brought to you by Geico. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance too? Get it all, geico.com. JT begins our morning on the phones in Alabama, listening to Sunday Morning Football. What's up, JT? Good morning.
Man, what's going on with you, man? How you doing this morning?
I'm great, brother. How you doing?
Man, I'm not too happy. I mean, it's JT in Alabama, but I'm really from Arizona. I'm from Pac-10. I'll never call it Pac-12 country. And I just get sick of how they just cannibalize each other out there. And none of us can never get to a final game or anything like that. I'm not saying that I'm not happy about having a playoff, but it's like, I don't know what we're doing to each other out there. Because, I mean, David Shaw, yeah, he's sorry this week. But who's it like last week? Herm Edwards was sorry. Or the week before that. You know,
yeah.
It's like we're going to keep on doing this.
I can't kill the Pac-12 for cannibalizing each other, because that's what good football conference should do. Is it should beat each other up. You should see good competition and elite teams going at it, elite programs on Saturdays. But you can't. The problem is you can't put the Pac-12 in that conversation, because outside of Stanford, no one is consistently good at the top. We've seen Oregon falter big time. USC is just an average team right now, not only starting a freshman quarterback, but I just don't think Clay Helton is the guy to get that back to where the program once was. UCLA way down, Arizona down right now with Kevin Sumlin. Question mark about obviously what's going on in Tempe with the Sun Devils. Washington should be a power broker, but lost that opening game to Auburn. So it just doesn't feel like there's great programs there. And I don't think Stanford's a great program. I think that they played yesterday as well as they could when it mattered. But a great program doesn't put itself behind the eight ball nearly 30-7 on the road. They don't have to do that. I just think that the problem is that the Pac-12 doesn't have those elite programs at the top, because Washington has taken its water on this year, and that's going to be tough to overcome. And since then, hasn't looked great. And then, as I said before, USC down, Oregon not where it was under Chip Kelly. And that means that Stanford is the last gasp for a great team in the conference. More of your phone calls coming up after the craziness of college football. Yesterday, I know a bunch of you guys want to weigh in on that. We'll get to your phone calls next. A lot on the NFL today as well. And when we return, one of my favorite segments every week, Excessive Celebration, the great local radio calls of yesterday's college football on Saturday. DA, Sunday Morning Football, CBS Sports Radio.
NFL action begins next Sunday with the NFL Today, followed by a full slate of regional games. You'll say, you saw it on CBS Sports.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
You can always watch the show at watchda.com this morning as you do your honey-do list, get some errands done, go to church, drive the kids around, get ready for football later on today. Listen and watch Sunday Morning Football. Watch it on your phone or any device. It's mobile-friendly, watchda.com. CBS's Super Bowl season continues today when Denver battles Baltimore, Oakland meets Miami, Buffalo heads to Minnesota, Cincinnati collides with Carolina, Tennessee takes on Jacksonville, and the City of Angels, the Chargers clash with the Rams. The day kicks off with the NFL Today, presented by Jeep at 12 Eastern on CBS. Jason's in Louisiana, listening on 1580 to Sunday Morning Football. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning. What's happening, my friend?
How you doing?
I got a quick question and then two comments, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
My first question would be, is Shaw overrated? Because you see him in games where he should win, they get the big spotlight. You know, and the Pac-12 is actually interesting because you have, you know, UFC, you have Oregon, you have Washington, you know, Washington State is 3-1. So you have all these good teams. Is he overrated?
I'm going to go the opposite way. I think he's underrated. I think the Stanford Cardinal in that conference have no business being the power team each and every year. But Stanford's patient. They know what they are. They're not a huge athletic school. They're not going to pour millions of dollars into practice facilities. That stadium is usually half empty anyway, no matter how high Stanford is ranked, unless it's a rivalry game. I think David Shaw knows exactly who he is, will not deviate. They don't get the normal athletes that USC does. And, you know, he kind of called that out a couple weeks ago. Well, people say that USC has the athletes. Well, we have the athletes too. Yes and no. I mean, Stanford is not an FCS team. It's not South Dakota. It's not going to be Louisiana Tech, but it is going to have some decent athletes. They have NFL players that come out of there all the time. I mean, Bryce Love is a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate here. At the same time, they do not have the normal Southern California West Coast five-star kids that come through there because the academic rigors are too hard and they don't really play a style of football that wide receivers and quarterbacks are going to be drawn to. So I don't think he's overrated at all. I think he's underrated. To me, Stanford doesn't get a lot of run because they're Stanford, but that's as well-coached a program as you're going to find in college football. Let's get to your best radio calls of yesterday's college football action.
The soundtrack of college football chaos. The announcers losing their minds.
At the goal line, I think he caught it for a touchdown. He got it! He got it! He got it! Touchdown, Nick Matthews! The Cougars win it! The Cougars win it!
Here's the best of the weekend. It's Excessive Celebration.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight! Holy cow!
Old Dominion holds a one-touchdown lead, 42-35, late in this game with about 90 seconds to play. All they need to do is take a knee, make sure Vatek doesn't get the football back. They're on their own 21-yard line, and they begin driving and driving and driving. And then they're across Vatek's midfield and at the Vatek 40-yard line. And instead of taking a knee, they hand the football off, and Jeremy Cox does the rest.
LaRussa in the shotgun. First and 10 from the Hokie 40. Turns, hands the ball off. And here's Cox keeping the legs moving. He's still moving. Jeremy Cox, near side, 15, 10, 5. Check, please. Touchdown, Old Dominion.
Oh, Ted Alexander, ODU Monarchs Radio Network with the call of a lifetime. as the Monarchs upset the number 13 Virginia Tech Hokies 49-35. What a amazing outcome. It is probably going to be the most amazing outcome we see all college football season. I have a hard time believing we'll find a game that is more unpredictable than a team with its backup quarterback out of the group of five throttling for 650 yards, a top 15 team. How about Army? They came this close. The Knights of Army going to Norman, Oklahoma, and giving OU everything it could possibly handle. Here we go to overtime. Army had tied things up and then gotten a missed field goal from Oklahoma as time expired to push to overtime. But in overtime, the Sooners score first and then...
takes the snap. Back to pass. Under pressure. And as he throws, balls in the air, and it's intercepted. Yeah. Parnell Motley picked it off. Unhitched the wagon. Oklahoma survives in overtime.
All right, so those guys do a really good job. This Toby Rowland on Learfield, but if the Sooners broadcast team is melting down over surviving in overtime at home against Army, they got another thing coming to them. That's a bad win. Okay. Now, look, Army is plucky. Army has gotten some really impressive performances the last couple of years. Jeff Monken, their head coach, knows what he's doing, and I'm rooting for him, and I think we all are loving the story every time that a service academy does well against power brokers, but that's the number five team of the country in Oklahoma. And they survive in overtime against Army, a team that can't throw the football. Can't. I mean, they just really, literally can't throw the football. I mean, to hear them going bonkers in the broadcast booth. I mean, if you beat Texas, I can understand. But you just beat an Army team that went 3 of 8 passing-wise. 3 of 8. They're a triple-option team. They threw for 40 yards yesterday. And the broadcast booth in Oklahoma going, yeah! You beat a team that completed 3 passes. Yeah! You're the number 5 team in the country, guys. And finally, how about Kentucky? They finally break the streak of losing against Florida earlier in the season. And then yesterday, a top 15 team comes in, or top 20 team in Mississippi State, and they punch them in the mouth.
Fiscal formation. Snell gets the call, running left, 35, 30, across the 20, across the 10, 5, touchdown, Kentucky!
How about the Wildcats? Number 14, Mississippi State goes down 28-7. That's Tom Leach on Kentucky Sports Network. Hey, guys, look out, because outside of Georgia, I don't know who's good in the SEC East, and it might be Kentucky. And the Wildcats have been an afterthought for ever in the SEC, obviously. That's a basketball school. But how about the Wildcats beating Florida and now Mississippi State? The Wildcats running for 220 yards against Mississippi State. Benny Snell had a 165 and 4 touchdowns yesterday against the Bulldogs. That's a really impressive win. And I gotta say, did you ever think you'd see the day where Kentucky football and Syracuse football might be ranked in the top 25 of the same day? The hell is going on around here? Just an amazing early start of the season for some of these programs. And what an impressive win by the Wildcats. Congratulations. Mark Stoops has been building that thing for a long time. They've given them patience. They've given them resources. And it's finally paying dividends. They are 4-0 and 2-0 in the SEC. And that is your excessive celebration. When we come back here on the show, the Jaguars could be the best football team in the NFL. After what they did last weekend to New England and the Patriots, it's time to really start wondering, are the Jaguars the power team in the AFC? We'll talk to a 5-time former Pro Bowler for the Jaguars, a guy that's in their ring of honor. You'll remember him from their glory days under Tom Coughlin in the 90s, wide receiver Jimmy Smith. He's going to join us on Sunday Morning Football.
You have a reservation for year-round excitement with CBS Sports. Your ticket to action.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
41 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for joining us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Each and every Sunday morning we do this. 2 hours breaking down what happened in college football yesterday. and previewing the NFL today. 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific here on CBS Sports Radio. Remember, if you're outside of your normal listening area or we're not carried in your region, that's okay. You can listen to us on your phone by downloading the CBS Sports app or radio.com or Apple Music. We're on all of those. Plus, you can watch us at watchda.com. Plus, we're on Sirius XM as well, Sirius XM Channel 206. Coming up next hour here on the show, we'll talk about the Patriots and Tom Brady. Fascinating book released by Ian O'Connor, longtime sports writer. And some of the quotes in there, unnamed Patriots assistant coach says that while the league is goo-goo gaga over Tom Brady, Patriots coaching staff never felt like they couldn't win without him. We'll discuss whether that is reality or fiction coming up here at the top of the show, or top of the next hour here on the show. Then also, what's the Patriots' potential here? Because they just got thwacked by a physical Jaguars team last week. And if you watch that game, you realize the score did not indicate just how dominant the Jaguars were. Also, Carson Wentz is back. We'll discuss whether the Eagles are set now to take off. And college football's middle class, which shouts, anarchy! After yesterday's college football action. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS. Or hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. You guys have so much to weigh in on. The Old Dominion upset of Virginia Tech. The zany meltdown by Oregon against Stanford last night out west. Everything that happened in college football right now, how dominant Alabama is, the separation they have had from everybody else, plus everything on the table today in the NFL. A lot of 0-2 teams trying to breathe some life into their season. So that's all up here on the table. Get involved. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Corey's in Boise, Idaho, listening to 93.1 The Ticket there. Good morning, Corey.
Hey.
What's up, bud?
Not a whole lot. I'm just kind of wondering what do you think is the reason why Boise State always gets just obliterated every time they get, in standings-wise, top 25. Granted, we did just get destroyed by Oklahoma State, who lost to Texas Tech yesterday.
Boise State's defense was no good in that game. Let's just call it as we see it. The Broncos' defense needs to be better, and while it was close early, they just had no answer for the weapons that Oklahoma State put out there. I don't think it's fair to say that Boise always gets annihilated when they play good teams. I mean, because look at all these Fiesta Bowl banners that they hang all across their stadium and facilities. I mean, they have had a tremendous reputation and legacy of being giant killers. This year, that was tough because not only did you lose, but you ended up getting blown out by more than 20 points, and you might not get another ranked opponent this year. Now, right now, BYU is a fringe top 25 team. You'll get them later on in the season in November. I'm heading to Boise, as those that listen to my regular Monday through Friday DA show know. I'm heading up there in a couple of weeks for San Diego State, which I'm really excited about. That's going to be the first weekend in October. So I get to see the blue turf up close and personal, which I'm totally fired up about. But I don't think it's fair to say that Boise State always gets annihilated when they play up to competition, because that's what has made their program and made their reputation. The giant killers, the giant slayers. They had one Power 5 team on the docket this year and ended up, unfortunately for them, getting knocked around in the game. But I don't think that's indicative of every time, certainly. The Giants and Texans today are such an interesting matchup because these are two teams that could have honestly said, hey, we are playoff contenders. Hey, we are good enough to be competing in the postseason in the NFL. I know that the New York Giants last year were a debacle, but from the Giants brass perspective, they're saying we're not that far away. We drafted a running back that can make our offense go. We've upgraded the offensive line by signing Nate Solder. We get Odell back because he was injured for most of last season. You know what? We feel like we could be pretty good. And here they are at 0-2, and both efforts have been lethargic at best. You want to know how desperate things are right now for the Giants? They have made a change at the most important position in their offensive line outside of left tackle and done it against J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney with an undrafted kid. Breaking news, the New York Giants will not start turnstile Ereck Flowers coming up here today. They will not start Ereck Flowers. Instead, they're going to go with undrafted second-year Chad Wheeler. You want to talk about desperate. Here's what's amazing about the New York Giants and the Houston Texans. The Texans came into the season high expectations as well, thinking that maybe they were the power brokers of the AFC South. Instead, the Jaguars look like they are leaps and bounds better than anybody in that division. Deshaun Watson has not been able to get comfortable, has not been able to kind of put this thing together offensively this year. So, either Bill O'Brien earned this reputation that he likes to swagger around with, offensive guy, offensive mind, former Patriot offensive coordinator, called plays with Brady, willing to go toe-to-toe with Tom Brady. Either he takes one of the most dynamic weapons of the NFL and beats an 0-2 team at home today, or he's a complete and utter fraud. This is the game. If you're Bill O'Brien and you don't win this game, what are you good for? You have one of the most explosive offensive weapons in the NFL, and you are taking on a team at home that hasn't been able to crack the 20-point mark in like 30 years. The Giants can't hit 20 points. They can't score three touchdowns. If you can't win this football game as Bill O'Brien of the Houston Texans, what are you doing? It is so bad the Giants will start an undrafted kid on the offensive line against J.J. Watt. You know what we call this thing? We call this game a stat game for the Texans. This is where everybody, if you're hurt, play. I don't care how banged up you are. Make sure you play. You'll get stats in this game. You'll get sacks in this game. That's why Clowney's going to be playing. You'll get numbers in this game. And for the New York Giants, if they fall to 0-3, and Eli Manning is bottled up again, and Saquon Barkley doesn't burst things open, it's going to once again be a reminder that the ownership led them down a primrose path that they shouldn't have in the offseason. The offseason, the Maras wanted to stand pat with Eli. Eli is beloved within that organization. The Maras love Eli. They saw the backlash to benching Eli last year. They didn't have the stomach to go forward with doing that and finding a new quarterback. So they said, let's hire people that also believe in Eli, that align with our belief that Eli is the answer right now. So we hire a general manager in Dave Gettleman that doesn't want to rebuild, that wants to win right now and believes in Eli. He'll hire a head coach and Pat Shurmur that feels the same exact way. We're going to put it all together. You know what ended up happening? In the first 2 weeks, and it'll show again today, as J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney chase Eli back to the swamps in New Jersey, harass him all day long. It's going to show you that Eli Manning should never have been counted on to extend his career past what it was. Here's the problem. Eli is not mobile. He's immobile. And so as he ages, it'll have to be his arm strength, decision-making, and scheme, okay? He does not slide to the pocket well. He does not get out and make plays with his legs. He's not Russell Wilson. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Andrew Luck. He also doesn't have the arm strength that Drew Brees still has in his career. He doesn't have the scheme that Tom Brady has at this point in his career. He's lacking all of these things, which means he will look older than all of those other guys of his age group. Rivers, Roethlisberger. Brees is going to look like this way longer than Eli ever could have hoped for because he's not built the same way. Eli's not a fitness freak. He's not a fanatic like Brees and Brady. Doesn't have the arm strength of Ben Roethlisberger. Can't extend plays. Doesn't have the quick release of Phillip Rivers. His game is going to age and is already aging. And today, the Texans have to take advantage of it to save their season. Giants are going with an undrafted second-year pro because Ereck Flowers is such a disaster. Whew. Good luck with all that. Let me ask you about the Minnesota Vikings here today. Because we all know that the Vikings are a Super Bowl contender. I believe that the Vikings and the Rams are the NFC Championship game preview. I think next week, Vikings-Rams, that's what it's going to be come January for a chance to go to Atlanta and the Super Bowl. But this line this week terrifies me if I'm the Vikings. We'll talk to Nick Costos coming up here, our Vegas virtuoso, in the second hour of the show. But a 17-point line in the NFL, 17 points. The only time we ever see a 17-point line in the NFL is when it has to do with the New England Patriots, and the Vikings ain't the Patriots, not yet. You got to win multiple Super Bowls and always blow out the inferior opponent like New England does for me to believe that you are 17 points better than anybody in the NFL. That is not only an indicator of just how bad the Bills are this year, that's going to be a 1-15, 2-14 team in Buffalo. But also, I think us getting a little bit too ahead of ourselves, the Vikings. I know I just said that they are Super Bowl candidate worthy. I know I said we're going to see them in the NFC Championship game. But this is a game that I'm very intrigued about because the Vikings haven't done it yet. And they should be able to waltz past the Bills, no questions asked. At home, comfortable, rookie quarterback coming in. Mike Zimmer should eat Josh Allen alive. But where are the Vikings in terms of their own expectations, in terms of taking opponents lightly? Where are they in terms of looking at this as a bye, if you will? Are they the type of team that is going to button up, take care of business, not take anybody lightly? Or are they the type of team that will read its own headlines, press clippings, and just believe, well, we're much better than the Bills, so we can take this thing lightly? I'm interested to see this because if the Vikings are the type of team that can win a Super Bowl, they win this game handily. If Kirk Cousins is the type of guy that can lead a team to a championship, he throws 350 yards up on the board at home today with three touchdowns. But are the Vikings too much too soon? I always worry about that with when we put teams up on a pedestal before they've ever accomplished anything, when they take on bad teams. You know it as a trap game. I'm not saying the Bills will win. I am saying there's no reason the Bills should be in this game past the second quarter. This should not be a one-possession game at any point after the first quarter is over. No point. Also, Aaron Rodgers of the Packers in Washington. Rodgers saying he is concerned that by playing on the knee, it will only get worse. If I'm the Packers, I am sitting Aaron Rodgers at some point in the first couple of 6 weeks of the season. They are home to the Bills next week, at the Lions after that, home to the Niners. I am giving Aaron Rodgers a breather at some point in the next three. I think had they beaten, and they should have, the Vikings last week, terrible 15-yarder on Clay Matthews that should have never been called, an egregiously stupid call by the officials. The Packers might have a little bit more breathing room, but instead they don't, so I think they feel like they've got to play him this week. I would seriously think about sitting him for at least one of these games where you should be able to win without him. Although we do know how bad they've looked without Aaron Rodgers. Five-time Pro Bowler for the Jacksonville Jaguars, member of their Ring of Honor, Jimmy Smith, is going to join us coming up off the top of the hour. We'll talk to him about where Jacksonville stands in the power rankings. Are they the best team of the AFC right now? DA, Sunday Morning Football, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.